What's going on? What's happening?
I got a couple questions. It's been good so far this year. We've got a lot of accounts in transition. I'm just trying to kind of keep the foot on the gas. One of the things that we're trying to focus on right now as well is one of the big goals that Merrill has for us is to start building out clients with that banking relationship, the banking side of things, because well, obviously they make revenue off of it, but it also makes clients much stickier. You know, not only do you have to change your investment person, but then you got to change your banking relationship too. So they have a big goal for us by the end of 2020 to have a pretty healthy percentage of our clients that have, you know, a deeper relationship. There's a lot of different things that can be. So one promotion that they've started, and I think you would be eligible for this as well on the personal side, but I'd like your advice on kind of how to approach this with clients, is they've started a new promotion where if you don't have any sort of Bank of America checking account right now, if you open one and then in 30 days deposit $2,000 and stay above a $2,000 balance, and then within 90 days you have to pay one bill online, they'll give you a $500 credit.
What's the return on that?
25%. I mean that's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, put in $2,500 just to stay above the number, pay a $200 electric bill or whatever.
How many times can I do it?
Well, you just one per person. So you could do, you know, you can do it. Chris can do, I mean, as long as whoever in your family does not have a Bank of America account, checking account, like it looks like, well, it looks like Chris and Kate have them already. But, I mean, you could even do it. Yeah, I mean, it's simple.
Right, so Marcia and I each do one.
Sure. The only stipulation is you can't go into a Bank of America and do it. They want us to open it from our side. So we get you pre-qualified and all that stuff. Yep, and then within, I think it's like 5 months or something, at the end of 5 months, you see the $500 credit. Each, yeah, each.
That's a pretty good return on $2,000.
It's not a bad deal. But their big thing is that, you know, they're obviously trying to farm kind of the Merrill Lynch clients as new Bank of America clients as well.
Right. But what else do they want you to do? I mean, the lines of credit that I use, is that something they're interested in, or is that Merrill Lynch or Merrill now?
You mean like the LMA stuff?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, they're fine. That kind of counts as part of that relationship. I mean, their big metrics are so out of there's four different metrics that they break down. They call it client service, and I'm pulling that up right now. I'm gonna they got all these new screens with all these new goals and everything that. So the four that they break it down into is investment advisory, which is almost all of our books. So that's one. Bank of America checking, trust or insurance. So like if you just have a trust and we name the account in your trust, I think that counts. And then or lending, which is, you know, home, LMA, HELOC. I mean, you name it.
So what does this account look like? This account will not pay me anything. It's purely a checking account.
Yeah, it'd just be like your daily checking operating account. I mean, the positive side is it does work pretty seamlessly with like Merrill Lynch. Like when you're on the Merrill Lynch app, you can kind of toggle back and forth. Everything's pretty seamless. But it's purely like an operating account, just like your checking account.
My wife will hate this, you know.
She'll like the $500. She can, you know, take yours and go shopping.
Right.
So that's I guess I'm kind of curious. Well, obviously,
how is the $500 treated?
It comes into your account within the 5 months. You see $500 more into your balance.
What does Uncle Sam say about it?
Uncle Sam says that's taxable income.
Okay.
Of course, like anything else.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, who would turn down $500?
Yeah, I'll tell you that the one thing that we had a little bit of hesitation about is people that bank elsewhere and just say, I know it's $500, but I just don't want to spend the time, you know, setting up the online, because it does have to be an online web bill pay. So, you know, people that aren't tech savvy are probably out, just because, you know, like we've got some clients that still don't use electronics really. Don't really use a computer. So, I mean, they tend to be the really old clients, but.
Well, we don't want to change our web bill pay and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to pay one bill. So, I don't know. That's kind of the hiccup. That's what we run into is, you know, that's a
hassle. Can't we just write a check?
No, it's got to be a web bill pay. So, it doesn't have to be automated, but you got to pay one bill online.
One bill online.
Whoa. And so that's the hiccup. That's what we're running into with most people is that's, you know, some people are all about it, and some people, it's just a hassle.
Well, I've never paid a bill.
We'll have to get Marsh on board.
I'm the wrong person. I don't know.
So I guess what's kind of your thinking on, you know, for other clients, we need to get people on board with this, and we need to make it worthwhile for them. You know, we're going to send out a letter to everybody just to make them aware of it and things like that. But how would you have that conversation so that it's a little bit more enticing than, hey, this is going to be a pain?
Well, the problem is there's nothing in it for me other than the money.
Yep.
It's not going to make my life better. It's not going to make my life easier. So the firm is saying the interest of the clients come second.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that could make it easier is that then, you know, well, you already check with Merrill Lynch, so that doesn't apply because we'd be able to see, we can see everything already, you know.
Right. See, there's nothing. This is what makes your fellow financial advisors crazy. For you, you're young and you want to, you know, you want to play the game because you're happy to have a job. But for your senior guys, they're like, see, it's the bank. They're insane. They have no understanding. You know, this relationship is worth $100,000, and you're jeopardizing it for the freaking six pack. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So why would you ever even consider that? And so you wouldn't. So they'll never do this. You'll be the only one in your office.
You think it's worth mentioning, but not really pushing. You know, just so clients know that it's open to them. But
if you could do the whole thing for me, that would be great.
Yeah. And we can do everything except for the web bill pay, you know, obviously. But
I mean, can't you do the web bill pay with Marsha on the phone?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know how they would register that. I'll have to look that up. Because I think what they want is they want you to get, like, the app or get online, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. But the question is, you know, if it's only for the firm and it's only for you and it's really a hassle for us and you're just going to pay us $1,000 to do it, try and make it as easy as possible so we don't have to do anything. And then I'll do you a favor and – Sure, it's $1,000, but as you know, in one morning in the market,
yeah,
I'll swing $150,000, you know.
Yep.
So it's, you know, I wouldn't burn a $1,000 bill, but it's really not going to mean anything.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
So
you wouldn't push
too
hard because you think it could kind of turn clients off.
I think any time it's not in the client's best interest, it's a rough sale.
Yep.
You're saying we're more important than you are, and I'm. On the other hand, you say, "Hey, I want to give your kid, you know, your grandchild $1,000." Hey, there's a good idea.
You know? And I think it definitely makes more sense. For, like you said, the second, you know, the generational clients as opposed to, you know, the grandparents that have worked with us for so long and have much higher assets. I think that's going to be a harder sell. But someone my age,
right.
I mean, is definitely worth it, you know.
Sure, $1,000 is still a lot of money to you. It's nice, you know. You can go and get stuff you wouldn't get. You know, we're getting rid of stuff. So yeah, maybe you could do it for Juliet. I don't know, we could put it in our name for Juliet and have her a little
well,
checking account.
They're eligible too. Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Give her the $1,000. I don't know. Anyway, I would do the loans. Because the loans are a great idea. The loans are a really good idea. Grandparents have a tough time with their children, or parents with their children, you know, senior parents that have a lot of money, have a tough time knowing where the line is in terms of helping their children.
That makes sense.
So, well, yeah. Do you buy them a house? Do you pay their rent? Do you pay for their cars? Do you give them a credit card? They're 40 years old, for God's sakes, you know, and you're still giving them a credit card and paying for their cars, and are you crazy? But parents like to help. So, you know, they want to buy a nice house. They can't afford it. You can be the bank. And they get credit approved, right? And then they pay you the interest just like you're doing. Now, I don't think many people do what we did and have their kids pay us and you guys handle the whole thing. I think that is a great marketing tool.
Yeah, just cut the bank out, right? Keep more money in the family.
Right. Well, you don't have closing cost. You don't have credit rating approval things. You don't have a hassle. You don't have aggravation. And instead of taking 6 months and then turning you down, you're approved immediately. So, and it's completely painless for both, right? It's painless for them. It's painless for me. I see it on my statement. And they're paying off principal and interest, and, you know, gradually it'll be paid off. And they think we're wonderful. And we think, I don't know, nothing's changed. I still have my portfolio. I just have a line of credit. So I'm on margin a little bit. Okay? So now you've really done something to help the children. Without giving them the money.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I like that. No.
Oh, no, that's really big. And nobody's doing it. I bet we're the only ones you have that are doing it.
We've got a few others, not a ton.
Mortgages, not just lines
of
credit.
We've got a few that have done it in regards to, like, car payments and stuff like that. Maybe one other has done a home.
Yeah, I think it's something you should market.
Yeah, that makes
Because
sense.
according to my CPA, all we have to do is issue them the same thing that a bank issues, and they can write off the interest. So we just literally become the bank. I bet you, of your senior clients, a third could do it or would like
Oh,
to do it.
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, as long as their kids are responsible enough to pay it back, I think that's the concern sometimes, but
Right. But you know what? You sell the house and take back your money.
yeah. I'm just writing some of this stuff down. Okay.
Yeah, like my brother is, he doesn't think they'd make the payments. He's not confident that his children are responsible enough to make the payments. But most people, it's just a matter of they don't have the principal.
Yeah.
They can make the payments, they just don't have the equity.
Yeah, well, and I think the other way you posit is too that, hey, it's not easy to get 4 or 4.25 or whatever interest rate you charge in the market anymore. Your
Right.
money's not going to be
They
earning
can't get
nothing.
approved. They can't get approved, right?
Yeah.
And so
Okay.
I gave them like 3.5%. So I give them whatever I feel like giving them.
Yep, and you're collecting 3.5%. Absolutely.
Right. And I'm being charged, whatever the market is. Who cares? Not doing it to make money.
Yeah. Okay, that's good.
Yeah, that's really good. See, that you don't waste your time on this other thing, seriously. A few people that young people, knock all the young people in the world. Hell. Take all the young people, do 50 of them with young people, but not your senior guys. It's too much trouble.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. What else?
One other thing is I've got a just kind of want your advice on this, because I think you're probably going to say just treat it like any other client and go through our process, but I'd kind of like your advice on this because it is a little bit of a I've come across a really good opportunity just from cold calling. And we're opening account. It's going to be small to start, but the guy's like 46. He's going to retire by the time he's 50. He started his own business about 10 years ago, and last year they did about $150 million in revenue. Private
Wow.
business. He owns 52% of it.
Yep.
And they've never done any planning. They have no trust in place. I mean, it just kind of blew up on him. He was a pharmacist, started his business, and now they have all this money. So it's between us and two other wealth managers to kind of come with the whole picture. And at the end of the year, he's picking who he feels has done the best job, and they get the whole puzzle, the whole pie. They're going to be taking about $3 to $10 million in distributions every year from now in perpetuity. So, I think you're kind of in that same ballpark as them. I know you've kind of talked about the concierge service. What do we kind of, how can we kind of come to the table with something different? Because I think, if we can bring even two things that are different that other people aren't talking about, I think that's significant.
I just talked to a guy this weekend about the pleasure I've had and the satisfaction I've had with my family foundation. There's a theory out there that says, you know, you shouldn't start a family foundation unless you have $100 million. And I think it's bullshit. Our family, I mean, this guy, does he have children?
Yeah, he's got three kids, and they actually foster their nephew. So, and tell me a little bit about your foundation. So how's that kind of set up? What happened? I mean, what's the benefit? Who does it benefit?
It benefits everybody. Families by their nature are dysfunctional. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
People are fighting all the time. They're resenting each other. There's probably as many periods where people aren't talking to each other as they are talking to each other in terms of brothers and sisters and, you know, knock on wood, right now,
sure.
My family is still talking to me. I mean, we're a normal family, right? Grew up, little kid, you know, went to public mm-hmm. schools and all went to college, all successful. My older brother didn't talk to my younger brother for like 3 years, okay? My youngest brother didn't talk to anybody in the family for 10 years.
Mm.
Pretty freaking dysfunctional, even though we thought we were the perfect family. I set up the Family Foundation with the purpose of helping people through education. That was my thing. You know, if we educate the population, everybody's better off, they get better jobs, etc. Our purpose was to help the diverse population, those under, you know, overachievers in the underachieving world, helping Black, Hispanic, females, go to college where they normally wouldn't, get internships, and otherwise, you know, help them with trade schools and other things.
Okay. Your family gets together once a year or something and kind of decides?
My children are very involved now. They each have, our family foundation will kick off about $70,000, right? We put about, I don't know, half of that into Wake Forest, and the kids get to give away the rest. So they each get around, let's say, $10,000 each to give away. Well, then they and their spouses are on the board. So everybody's on the board. Everybody gives away, or let's say, theoretically, $10,000, right? So you've got six people that are on the board. Bringing the spouses on changes the dynamics dramatically and makes it more professional. So I just wrote up a policy statement, and we have a regular meeting. We do it through Alexa show. You know, we could do it with Skype or anything else. And everybody presents what they want to give the money to ahead of time. And then we have a board meeting, and I'm the chairman, Chris is the president, Marcia is vice president, Courtney is secretary, treasurer, Courtney's treasurer, and who else? There's somebody Simon is secretary. And so his responsibility is to call the meetings and have it ready and da-da-da, put out the notes and the minutes. And anyway, he runs the meeting, and everybody presents. And then we, in a nice way, argue about who get what. No, they're very generous to each other. You know, somebody's got a stronger argument, they get the money. And, you know, Simon gets to give away his money, and Kate gets to give away her money, and everybody gets paid. I don't pay them much. I pay them like $2,000 a piece for the year, but that's $4,000. And I think we gave them a $100 raise this year, and Chris loved that. So, you know, it's only worth, what, 1.3 3 or 4 million now.
Yeah,
but
I was just looking at it.
I've got a Dynasty Trust, which will spill in 5 million, you know, when I pass and Marcia passes. And there's other insurance policies in there that will kick into that. So it will probably be worth, you know, 10 million. At that point, they can probably take 20,000 out easily each, 25,000. So that's 50 grand they can make as a couple off of it. So it's a way to give them guaranteed income. And we talk, you know, we talk a lot and email, and we have something to do together.
Sure.
And knock on wood, everything is going pretty good, but you have a purpose as a family then, instead of just motoring. And there's wealthy people that have no purpose for their family. I mean, they just really don't. So that's one thing. The second would be a dynasty trust. And what you do is you create a dynasty trust, but then you pre-fund it. Okay, a dynasty trust by its nature is only funded when you die. But you fund it with life insurance currently, but you don't take anything out of it. I told Courtney about this when she was in college, and she said, "Dad, but I need money now." Okay? Because it's an incentive trust. It's an incentive to do things well. So if you go to college and graduate, you get $10,000 a year forever. If you get your master's, you get $15,000. If you get your doctorate, you get $20,000. If you're an Eagle Scout, you get $5,000. If you get married, you get $5,000. If you have a baby, you get $5,000. And she said, "Yeah, but I need the money now." So what Marcia and I did was sort of create a current dynasty trust without physically creating it. So we said that if you get married, you get $5,000 from this artificial trust. And if you have a baby, you get $5,000. And if you do this, so we take something that would be in the future, and we move it to the present by just giving them the money, okay? So we kind of tell them it's from the Dynasty Trust, but it really isn't from the Dynasty Trust. But it serves that purpose of being an incentive trust. So instead of just giving them 20 grand a year, we give them 20 grand because they graduated from college. Now, with Chris, we had it, 10,000 a year because they graduated from college. With Chris, he didn't graduate from college, but he graduated from trade school, so we made an amendment and said that counts. But Courtney got her master's, so she gets 15, he gets 10. We stick with that.
Sure. So for the Dynasty Trust, just so I understand, you've pre-funded it with life insurance.
Right.
So how would you recommend that for, most situations, like with this client as well? And then
Yes. When
they meet certain things, they just pay them with cash, basically, not out of the Dynasty Trust?
Right. So you write up the Dynasty Trust to be something that you'd like. Here's what you say. You want to create something that's going to pass on your values to the next generation, and you do it by using your wealth to pass on your values.
Sure.
Okay. So my question always is to the client, how are you going to use your wealth to pass on your values? And they look at you like you have two heads, right? I don't know. And you say, here's a couple ways to do it. One is the Dynasty Trust, and the other is a family foundation.
So you have the family foundation as beneficiary of the Dynasty Trust.
I have the family foundation as beneficiary of the you're right. Wait a minute. Think.
I'm sure I can pull it up here if I can see the policies. John Hancock, insured. owner, Knapp Family Irrevocable Dynasty Trust. Well, yeah, so I'm not even going to name beneficiaries in the policies because it's going to follow your irrevocable dynasty trust.
I think they go into the dynasty trust.
I didn't know after you pass if that dynasty trust stays as a dynasty trust or does it then evolve into the family foundation?
It's a really good question. I thought it in my brain. I always had it going into the family foundation, but I think it stays by itself as a dynasty trust forever. That's the idea of a dynasty.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so that money then goes to, let's say your children meet all of the requirements for that. Then there's requirements for your grandchildren as well. They can kind of get money out as they meet certain things as well.
Out of the dynasty trust?
Yeah, does that go on in perpetuity?
Yes, forever. And their children and their children's children and so forth.
Gotcha.
So everybody that, you know, gets married gets $5,000 from Bobo.
I love it. Okay.
So no matter, you know, here's one of the things to talk to these people about. Let me think of the companies. W.T. Grant was a big department store, like JCPenney, like Sears, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is no more W.T. Grant, but if you listen to NPR News, there's a W.T. Grant Foundation that's constantly giving money. So the point is that the family is gone, the money is gone, the stock is gone, but the foundation lives on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So Rob's money maybe they grow it, maybe they kill it, you know?
Yeah.
But the foundation will always be there.
And you can set those requirements that they have to meet however you'd like, correct? So, like, this family is a really strong Christian family, so they can set it around, you know, if your kid gets baptized, they get $5,000, you know, okay.
Right, so you got two things going on that'll be in perpetuity. You have the Family Foundation and you have the Dynasty Trust. They will both pass on your values. One, you teach them philanthropy, giving, right, Christian value. And the second, you teach them incentives, right, incentive rewards, capitalism. So if you go to college and you get a degree, $5,000. Master's, $15,000. Doctorate, $20,000. Maybe you don't want a doctorate. But if you're an Eagle Scout, you get $5,000. If you have a baby, you get married, you have a baby, it's $5,000. And not enough people are having babies, okay?
No, I think this is good because they have outright said that their goal is not to leave a huge chunk of change to their kids. I mean, they want to make a difference, you know? And so
that's what I always said. I don't, you know, I've always said the same thing. So instead, the kids feel like they earned the money that we give them every year.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's coming from mom and dad. They still feel like it's coming from the Dynasty Trust, even though the Dynasty Trust isn't in effect.
I like that.
So to me, that's a brilliant thing to do. So there's probably a term you can use for it, you know, an artificial dynasty trust or something, where you put it in effect, but it doesn't actually go in effect until you pass away.
Mm-hmm. So after you pass, meeting these requirements will actually come from the dynasty trust, but until then, that's right.
It'll be run by the trust officer. And you'll apply, you know, they'll automatically send the money out every year.
So you're basically just putting it in force beforehand, before it actually is in force. Gotcha.
Right.
I'm with you now.
And these guys could fund their family foundation immediately with, you know, $4 or $5 million.
Absolutely.
Then they're giving 5% of that away every year to good causes, but they're not. The point is that they're not spoiling their children. They're teaching them values, And they're setting up something that will be perpetual even if the kids piss away all their money.
Sure.
Now, I don't think anybody else is going to talk to them about their values and this stuff.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. This is perfect.
They're going to talk to them about how they're going to outperform the Dow.
Sure. And I think this is great, too, because they've even come and said, look, you know, obviously performance is important. We don't want to, you know, just crater. But that's not how they're going to make their end decision. It's not going to be, you know, who has the best performance. That's not what it's all about. So that's perfect.
And if you want me to get on a conference call or do whatever I can to help on this, I'd be happy to, because you can tell I'm pretty passionate about it.
No, that's perfect. I mean, I'm excited about this. Is kind of, you know, you don't come across these opportunities that much, and especially with money already coming in-house, I mean, it could be huge.
But think about it. This is the conversation you should have with every family that has any set of values.
Absolutely. So are you familiar with how those are taxed, like the Dynasty Trust? Because it is an IRREV, so there's no tax there because it's all life insurance. And then the foundation, is that like a 501c3 basically? How is that kind of structured?
Yeah, it's a charity, yeah. We don't get as big a deduction when we put money into it as you would if you gave money to a 501c. You know, like I give it to Wake Forest, I get a full deduction. I give it to my family foundation, I get, I think, two-thirds of that.
Gotcha. Okay.
But they're not going to care. They're not going to care about that. See, that's not going to be as important to them because they have values.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. I mean, this is great. I love this. And then especially that we can come with the full facet and say, hey, you know, we can use our in-house trust officers. Oh, and we're not going to charge you for that. That's already part of the relationship. I think you talk a lot about consolidating, keeping it simple.
Right. Keep control. Perfect. Keep control of everything, and we take care of everything. I mean, and I would say, look, the other thing is to articulate the relationship that you have with me in terms of, look, you know, I don't do much, right? I mean, I'm big at delegating, and I delegate to you guys. You handle everything pretty much. You know, you talk to my CPA, you send my tax form to the CPA. You know, Linda's working on everything. I mean, what? You know, when do I not use you guys? And other people are doing all this crap, and they're paying people, but they're not. They're paying them to manage money. I pay you guys to manage my life.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the fees are reasonable. My brother pays hardly any fees, but he gets no service.
Yep.
Now, which would you rather have? No fees and no service, or fair fees and tons of service?
Yeah, depends on where you're at, right?
It depends on whether you have a brain or not.
No, that's great.
I mean, it's really, you know, it's a different mindset, right? My mindset is delegate every single thing you can in your life so you have time to think.
Sure.
And his is, you know, what did I call it? Radical delegation in the book, right? Have you read the book?
Yeah. Not yet.
Have you read
it? On my desk.
Oh, God, I'm going to kill you.
Oh, come on. I'm the worst reader ever. I'll catch it. The way you pin me down is if I got a flight or something like that, that's when I, you know, I'll burn through it in a day. But
now, listen to me. Did you get a good idea from me today?
Absolutely.
Okay. Did I tell you I held back nothing in the book?
You did.
Therefore, all my ideas are in there.
I've got some homework.
It's a gold mine. It's got every good idea in there. And I haven't had one person write a review on my book yet.
Well,
you know how sad that is for the author?
It.
And it's the number one book on Amazon for business investment. Even though it's not about investments.
I love it.
So lots of people are buying it. No one's reading it.
Okay.
Now, my other clients are reading it, actually. I'm making them read it. The other thing to do is, I don't have it on audio yet. I'm I'm getting Scott Hoke to read it, so he will have it on audio and just play it in the car going back and forth to work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah, ask your associates to write a review on it, because I got one bad review in my other book, and I'm perpetually with 4 stars, you know, which kills you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I need 5 stars, and I need some good reviews right away, and that helps my Google Analytics, you know.
Yeah. Okay. We can get that done. I think Kim's right. I'll have her do something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, write a – and you can say things about my coaching and all the rest of it. It's okay to say it in the review.
Got it. Okay. We can get it done. What?
All right.
What else are you seeing? I mean, what else are you seeing working out there in your conversations? I mean, we're kind of – you know, we're chasing it from all corners and having some success.
Here's one of the things to do. I mean, this is what's working is when they listen to me as a coach. Okay. So one of the things that I tell them is to meet with 15 minutes before every call as a team, listen to the call, and then meet for 15 minutes after the call.
Okay.
Okay. Skipping the calls is not a good idea for the team. It's good for you.
Hmm.
And this was helpful for you, but this would have been helpful for all of them to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just to reinforce what they're, you know, they know this, but my guess is they didn't come to you and say, this is what you should do. Right. So guess what? It isn't in their brain like it is in mine. So therefore I can be of value to them also. The team I just worked with before is really a smart team, and they're working on centers of influence and niches and doing a good job with them, and they're brand new at it. So I'm very impressed with how seriously they're taking it. And they're signing up clients to do 12-4-2, and every single client has said yes.
Mm-hmm.
No pushback.
Yeah, new clients love it.
Yeah, I only want to be called quarterly. None of that. I want to be called quarterly bullshit or any of that. They're really listening and doing the program the way it's supposed to be done. So I think they're going to have a bright future, and it's a similar situation. Not similar, but I mean, it's a junior, you know, a 40-year-old with a 65-year-old, a male, 65, junior, 40-year-old, and they're, you know, she's the one leading the team, and he's cooperating 100%. So, you know, it's a really good case. They have great assistance. They're going to do super. So, and he just brought in a $5 million introduction, you know, a $5 million client. So mm-hmm. They are, you know, they're in a similar place. I'll kind of keep you posted. It's so interesting. You'd think everybody that I would coach would sound like that, right? But
you think.
No.
Too easy, I guess.
It's why listen to Rob. No, they don't do their homework. They don't do their homework. They're not prepared. They don't keep up. They're distracted. They're doing seminars. They're, you know, it's like, you know, I'm sorry, but why did you take this course, you know?
Yeah.
So when I get a couple good ones, it's really fun. They don't prospect, though. There's no one prospecting.
Which is unbelievable to me. I mean, I think the big thing is it takes a while, and people want it to just be instant, you know?
Of course. Yeah, the whole thing. Why would I call a center of influence every month and meet with them every month? Why would I do that? Because it works, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's too much work. to get 20 million a year in introductions, why? It's too much work. Sorry. Well, can you guarantee me the 20 million? No, but if you have the right center of influence, it's probably worth 20 million. That's too much work. They don't say that.
Yeah.
They say, oh yeah, I'll do it, and then they don't do it. So what they're really saying is, it's not worth it to me. I'm doing okay.
That's got to be frustrating.
It's really frustrating. I mean, you think you're going to cure cancer just by curing cancer? No. You'll never cure cancer because people won't listen. They won't take their medicine.
That's sick, isn't it?
No, it's humans. And that's marketing. I got the answers. You think we don't have the answers to diabetes, to obesity in this country? That's really, really complicated. You know, as my friend said, you can never outrun your spoon. It's a great line.
I love it.
When somebody says, I just can't lose weight. I'm exercising, so you can never outrun your spoon.
Mm-hmm.
So don't think you can just run off the calories. You're eating more than you're burning. Either your metabolism is slowed or you're eating too much. It's
both.
A simple game. Right. And why do people that are, 100 pounds overweight have diabetes and heart conditions?
Yeah.
Oh, complicated. So have the answers doesn't mean you – people will listen.
Yeah. I heard two sayings the other day. I've got them up on my bulletin board since you're on that. It made me think of you. And they're real short and sweet. One was, do simple better. And I love that because that's a lot what we come down. You know, that's a lot of what we are talking. It's not groundbreaking stuff, but just do simple better. And one for me, because I get way ahead of myself sometimes, is stay where your feet are. Kind of another way of just saying, be in the moment. But I like the way that
right.
said.
Yeah, I used to say do less better.
Mm-hmm.
But do simple better is basically the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's because I had 1,000 ideas. Never a shortage of ideas.
Yep.
But
I'm the same way.
It was doing them and following up and being efficient, and attention to detail. So,
sure.
Have one, begin with one center of influence, do it right, meet with them, go to their office, have them meet with your team, teach them the enthusiastically endorsed model, and then meet with them monthly.
Yep.
Just do one. Do the first one. It's a 5-step process. Just go right through it. Why do you do it? Because it works. Why don't people do it? Because it works.
Lazy.
They just don't believe it works. They think there's got to be a pill. There's got to be something easier. It can't be that easy, Rob. I just follow this and I'll get referrals. Yes. I refuse to follow this.
Oh man, I can't imagine what you hear every day. I couldn't do it.
No, it's great because I get somebody like you and I get somebody like my team I just heard, and then I'm in a good mood. But if I hear it, I hear the other, I'm just like, and then they're arguing with me. That's the other thing I love. You signed up, you knew what this was, but now you're arguing. I said, why am I here? I'm doing this for fun, remember. I'm not taking a salary. So.
Oh, gosh. You're a saint. I couldn't do it.
Oh, yeah, you could. It's easy. It's fun. It's rewarding, and it keeps my brain from turning to mush.
Everybody's got to find that, right?
Right, right. So now I get to go ride my bike downtown and get a quiche and a nice tea. And say hello to the cute girls behind the counter and meet a few friends probably and say hello and then come back and do it a little, couple more times this afternoon.
Living the dream.
It's a pretty, yeah. God, I'm having trouble with my, I'm having trouble, Kyle, with my swing. It's driving me crazy.
I was just about to ask you when you're coming back up here because we got to play some golf.
I played in the member guest, and it just was so frustrating. Ugh. My partner played pretty well. I played good from time to time, and when I played good, we won. And when I didn't play good, we lost.
You know what?
He's played, yeah.
My fallback, because it's one of those things where what's actually happening always feels very different than what, you know, it looks like, than what you feel like is happening. So my thing is, I would always go hit balls and take a few swings at like 60% with your eyes closed, and try to hit the ball. You'll be surprised. The first couple will be really ugly, but usually you'll be really surprised at how quickly you feel something that you didn't realize was going on. Because your eyes are always kind of telling you something different. But as soon as you close your eyes, I mean, you might hit 3 inches behind it, but you're going to be like, wow, I can't believe I was swaying that hard. Or, I can't believe that I felt that. And then all of a sudden, try to do it again and change that a little bit. And you'd be surprised how simple you can make your golf swing feel in five swings.
Oh, that's really helpful.
That's what I've always done. I mean, it's just, if you can hit balls with your eyes, because when I'm swinging really well, I can close my eyes and I can just stripe it. And when I'm not, you know, I feel something. I don't know what
right.
it is. It's always different, but.
And I've got like 6 golf swings.
we got to narrow that down.
I don't have 6, but I probably have 4. And, you know, it's just like, oh, God, which one am I going to use today? You know, what am I thinking about today? Oh, God, it's so painful, you know, because it's like, okay, and then I feel it, right? And then I feel it. Oh, that was good. Okay. Okay, I'm pulling through. That feels good. That feels good. Okay. And then it's like gone, missing. Okay, remember that? Can you remember that? Write it down. I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to take – I'm going to create a folder, a Supernova folder for golf, and write down my proper swing thoughts and what I learned from each lesson, and then just review it. And I like that about the closing your eyes. I think that's really good.
Oh, it's just, you know, a lot of times what you feel is just so different, you know? It just.
Right. And when I see it on video, it's like, who is that guy?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know I was doing that. Why didn't somebody tell me that?
Right. Am I really bending my arm that much? You know, it's
yeah.
like, what?
You'll be surprised. And when you close your eyes, you might feel something that you've never even tried to fix before. You know, it might be something completely different, which I've seen that before too. And people are like, are you kidding me?
Wow. Okay. I'll go try it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Maybe together.
Yeah, let me know. I'll be curious.
Maybe you can fix me at the same time I'm helping to fix you.
Well, I need a lot, but you know, I've always had a decent eye for that. I don't know what it is. I've always been a pretty good. I just kind of keep it simple myself, so I've always been pretty good about kind of identifying a good swing thought. So I would love to get out and do that sometime.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, we'll have to do it. I'm going to be, you know, trying to figure out a place in Nashville to hit some balls. I guess the Country Club of Tennessee is supposed to be really nice.
Yeah, they've got another golf course, I think, in Nashville called, is it Colonial? Is there a Colonial in Nashville or something?
I don't know. I don't know that one.
I'd have to look it up. There's a couple places down there that are, Nashville's got some great golf.
Yeah, I've heard that, but I, you know, of course, I've not played anywhere there. I don't know where Vanderbilt plays.
So I actually played a tournament at their golf course. That is a great golf course if you can get on there.
Where is it? What's it called?
Man, you're going to quiz me on this. I'm going to have to look it up on my computer because I don't remember the name. I want to say I think it's a school-owned course, maybe. Let me look it up real quick. Because I played in a college tournament there, but they always had it in, like, March, and we always got the worst weather. I mean,
but
like,
you like the course.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a difficult test. Let's see. Let's see what Google comes up with. No, that's not it. Vanderbilt Legends Club.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So is it public or?
I think it, more than just elegant clubhouse. Members enjoy this. Let's see what it says. I do remember it was really nice.
That might make sense for me because I'm going to be in town and Vanderbilt's in town. And, you know, I don't need the greatest golf course in America, but it would be fun to have.
They got 36 holes there, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
If they let the school use it, it's usually a pretty, you know, open-minded place. That's a good thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's worth giving a call. Looks like they've got a bunch of different membership offerings and, you know, who knows? I don't know. You might even know somebody in Nashville that's a member. I mean, you're pretty well connected.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've got lots of friends, lots of, you know, we used to manage that area. So I have people that I remember from, they're going to want me to join Belle Reve or something like that. I mean, not some expensive, nice, out in the suburbs thing, but I'm a city guy now. So I want to be close to my, actually, I'd like a place where I could take a five-year-old to hit golf balls.
Oh, they got a nice range here. I mean, you could totally do that.
Yeah, that's what I want. A program for turning a five-year-old into a national champion.
When I was there, they had Darius Rucker come out one night at dinner and play guitar and sing.
Isn't that cool?
It was really cool.
They say you just go to church anywhere and you're going to hear voices like you can't believe.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah.
I can't wait. I can't wait to go to church. I'm going to get Courtney to go.
Yeah, that's something I was never gifted with. It's not my cup of tea, but
no, I can't sing. See, Courtney can sing and Juliet can sing. Simon can sing, but, they, you know, I just have to talk them into the Christian side of things.
Yeah.
they're neglecting their spiritual side.
Maybe you need to add that to the dynasty.
Right. No,
that's
to
the dynasty trust.
Well, think about that. How that would, you know, I don't know how to work that in.
I don't know. I mean, there's different, there's all different kind of sacraments and different, you know, whether it's confirmation or baptism of their kids or.
Wow, that's a good idea. You're right. Baptism, confirmation.
First communion. I mean, you can do.
Yeah.
Marriage. If somebody has like a Christian wedding by an ordained pastor and meets certain requirements. You do a lot of different things with that.
It's so funny. They consider themselves, you know, spiritual people, but not, you know, total believers. But they definitely wanted their daughter, my granddaughter, baptized. I'm like, what are you just playing both sides? You know, covering all bases here.
That's especially people my
sort
age.
The
I'll tell you, you see that a lot nowadays. You know, it's like, I believe in it, but not real. Not, you know, not the whole church thing. It's like, wait a second.
Right. Yeah, I did he really come down? Was he really? Did he rise? I don't know. I kind of don't go for all that, but I want my kid baptized.
Yeah, it's like we don't get to pick and choose. You know, you don't get to like pick what your favorite things are here. You know,
Right. Anyway, so
hey,
fun. Anyway.
I'm not going to take your whole day, but Linda's got, I think Linda was wondering if you got a few minutes to do a couple verbal recordings.
Sure, always for Linda.
Always for Linda. All right, I'm going to touch on hold. She'll probably transfer you. Actually, I'll just transfer you to her line because she's going to have to do that anyways.
Roger.
And then
okay, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the time.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.